भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Krishna is present in the sound of his holy name. We call his holy name very mercifully. He's making himself manifest. And Srimad Bhagavatam, he's also making himself manifest. And this evening's verse, he makes himself manifest in this world out of his causeless mercy. What the verse is, the overview of the verse that we're going to be discussing, is when he does appear, his activities, some of his activities, appear to be quite worldly, like us, in the sense, that sense of worldly. But, big mistake to think that he's worldly. So many of the prayers to the Supreme Lord are describing, you are the source of everything. The entire cosmic manifestation emanates from you only. And then, very mysteriously, you enter within that which has come from you. And you move about as if you're one of us in this place that you have created. And then at your own sweet will you leave this place. How mysterious you are, and how fortunate we are to see you, but those who are deluded by the very potency that comes from you, when you enter, they cannot understand your position. But by devotion one can understand Krishna's position, and here it's being explicitly disclosed. If we hear in the right mood, or with the right receptivity, then we'll come to understand Krishna, how he's manifesting, even in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. The verse reads, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, appeared on this planet by his internal potency and enjoyed himself amongst competent women as if he were engaging in mundane affairs. So, first Prabhupada goes through explanations, brief, why he is not ordinary and the queens are not ordinary, although the appearance was in certain ways ordinary. The certain way that it was ordinary is, here we find husband and wife, Krishna, husband, the queens were wives. So it appears ordinary. But what wasn't ordinary, we've already heard, fabulously, 16,000 fabulously wealthy palaces. Some king may have a palace. 16,000 palaces of the opulence of Krishna, no man can do. And even more, even if one had great, 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 great wealth, they can't manifest 16,000 forms of themselves. And simultaneously be performing different activities in different palaces at the same time. The chapter that we referred to yesterday evening was Narada's entrance into Dwaraka after the killing of Narakasura. And what he saw was amazing. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, the description is even more amazing. When Narada went from house to house, or excuse me, palace to palace, what he experienced was that Krishna's activities had no limitation of time. Meaning, in one place, Krishna was meeting in the Sudharma assembly hall. In another place, Krishna was putting his children to bed. In another place, Krishna was having a big festival in the palace. In another place, Krishna was having his breakfast. I mean, time and space have no restriction upon Krishna. Not only 16,000 different Krishnas at the same time, doing different things at the same time. The reference is that there's a mystic yoga ability where a yogi may manifest up to seven forms of himself, but in those seven forms of himself, each one of those seven forms is an exact likeness of the other one, but is a successively weaker and weaker and weaker version, and up to seven. But they can't do simultaneously seven different things. That one form does just like a reflection. But Krishna is Yogeshwara. So Krishna is not ordinary. Although appearing as if one of us and appearing as if his activity was ordinary, we should erase that mistake that he's ordinary. And the queens, similarly, they were not ordinary. Why? The reason Prabhupada gives to become the wife of the personality of Godhead. Well, either they're nitya siddha, living entities, or it's the result of many, many millions of births of tapasya. So, that's not ordinary. Like to come to the post of Brahma, mentioned in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam. Listen to this. 100 lifetimes of flawless execution of varna and ashram duties. Try to live a day. Try to live an hour. Flawlessly. And if there isn't someone qualified, Krishna does it himself. That's a high bar. 100 lifetimes of flawless execution of dharma, varnashram duties. What to speak of a queen? Many millions of lifetimes of tapasya. Not ordinary. But why does he do this? He has no business here. He's compassionate. He's performing pastimes. I'm just following the sequence of Prabhupada's purport. It's very, very, it's laid out so logically and so poetically. He's come just to perform activities that will attract our hearts and minds to him and to the spiritual world. He's coming to to invite the conditioned souls to return to the spiritual world. By performing activities that look like their activities, but are way beyond their activities. And that's the benefit, why we're hearing these things, and why Vyasadeva has placed them here, is for that reason. To attract us back to Krishna. Now, what's the material circumstance of life? It's not attraction to Krishna. He calls it a sad experience. Service, pervertedly represented in the material world and broken untimely, results in a sad experience. Krishna is inviting us into his transcendental loving service, minus that, the default is this sad experience. We're serving nonetheless because it's our constitutional position, but we're serving the masters of lust and anger and greed, feeling justified. Well, of course I'm angry because look what they did. And getting carried away by the material circumstance of life. Service propensity is there, misplaced. It's a sad experience. And Krishna knows that. So he comes. The illusioned living being conditioned by material nature cannot understand that out of ignorance, all of our relations here in the mundane world are temporary and full of inebrieties. Such relations cannot help us become happy, even for a moment, what to speak of perpetually, but that's what we want. And that's the spiritual position that Krishna is inviting us to, where there's perpetual happiness. What a deal, huh? Would you like an eternal supply of eternal happiness? Well, that should have a big market. People want it. But they don't want to pay the price. So they get the imitation one instead. I learned something about medicine. They have a term, generic. Is anybody a pharmacist here? There's medicine, there's brand names, and there's generic. And the way it was explained to me is, it's like saying, would you like some rice? And there's different qualities of rice. There's something that's kacha rice, and there's something that's paka rice, and you just say, would you like rice, and you get rice. But the generic means they give you the kacha rice, and you pay a lesser price. So people, and India is a big producer of kacha medicines, generic medicines. It costs much less, so people buy those lesser cost medicines. Generic. But then the brand name is, they go to the trouble to make, at least theoretically, they go to the trouble to make really, really quality product, and then they brand it. And you pay more because you're paying for the brand. Not exactly appropriate here, but you know, there's the imitation thing and there's the real thing. And the real happiness, it's just like this discussion about humility. What's absolute humility? Well, any quality is absolute. Like happiness is absolute. Real happiness is unlimited, unending, ever increasing. That's real happiness. And the other is not happiness. Might pass in this world for happiness. You know, the generic happiness. Generic brand. It never satisfies. But people will continue to buy it because they don't want to pay the price. Or they don't even know that there is the real happiness. That's one of the saddest things. They don't even know. They're being cheated and they don't even know. They don't even know what the real thing is. That it's available. If the same relation is established with the Lord, then we are transferred to the transcendental world after leaving this material body and become eternally related with Him in the relation we desire. He's so accommodating. Of course, the relation we desire in the pure sense is what our constitutional relation is. It's not like you pick from a menu and I want one of those. It's what we really are. So back again to the theme. He lived with his queens as a husband lives with his wife, or as a king lives with his queen, apparently engaging in worldly things together. But he and they were not worldly. Their abode was not worldly. And by hearing about them, as we're doing, it brings the perfection of life. It brings to a higher level what the sense of relationship is, what the sense of relationship of husband and wife is, what the sense of any relationship is. Krishna is Parabrahma, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Conditioned souls seek after perpetual happiness in all places, not only on this earth, but also on other planets throughout the universe. Constitutionally, like the theme of easy journey to other planets. One of the first books that Prabhupada wrote while he was still in India at the time of space exploration. So he was describing, why do people want to go to these other places? One is they're not satisfied here. But the other is, it's their constitutional right, capacity-wise, to experience life in all the parts of creation. And so that's, this space exploration is just an expression of that. But it's childish and very expensive. Just hearing Prabhupada say that even when they came to explore, the European explorers were searching for new lands. Christopher Columbus came and discovered America. But it was already there. He discovered what was already there. But the benefit was the Europeans could come and colonize. And they go to the moon, get a handful of rocks, and we're studying our handful of rocks and dust. Now let's go to the Venus planet. We'd like another $12 billion, please. Oh, wonderful, you've done a great job. Here's another $12 billion. Waste of people's money. Nor could they remain there because the atmosphere is not appropriate, nor are they entitled to enter into that region because they're going by mechanical means. But supposing then they actually become qualified and enter into the higher regions, still that perpetual happiness is not experienced, is not attainable by those means. Still the living entity wants that. It's why they want that. It's our constitutional position. We want our constitutional position. It's natural for us. Searching life after life for that which is inherently our right. It's inherently within us. Then comes the stage where one recognizes that this perpetual happiness is not within this world. So one may seek impersonal realization. But the happiness of Krishna is beyond the impersonal realization. It's certainly beyond something worldly. Nor can his paraphernalia of happiness be found in the material world. He is not impersonal. Because he is the leader and the supreme being amongst innumerable living beings, he cannot be impersonal. He's exactly like us. And he has all the propensities of an individual living being in fullness. Or you could say the other way around. We have his propensities. We have his propensities. Where do we get those propensities? Like Prabhupada goes through a list. What about stealing? We get it from Krishna. Krishna steals. But his stealing is not like our stealing. Or our stealing is not like his stealing. Ours is reprehensible, punishable. And his is transcendental. It's simply for the pleasure of others. Not because he's in need of something. Someone else has some property that's not his and he wants it, so he tries to steal it. It's all his property. It's all loving exchange with his pure devotees. Now what about his marrying? He marries exactly like us. But his marriage is neither mundane nor limited by our experience in the conditioned state. His wives therefore appear like mundane women, but factually they are all transcendental liberated souls, perfect manifestations of internal energy. Both the verse and the purport are leading us to, while hearing about Krishna's exchange with the queens, is helping us to prepare for Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and all of Krishna's pastimes, where we should very, very carefully, that, you know, like protect ourselves from the mistake of thinking of Krishna in some material way. Because one of the attractive features of both Ram's Leela and Krishna's Leela is they're very human-like. So people can relate to them. How do you relate to Lord Nrisingadev or from a mundane point, from a devotional point of view, it's easy, but and kurma, matsya, and braha. This is human-like. Ram and Krishna. Because they're human-like, it's very easy for the mind to, even not necessarily intentionally, but the mind to make the mistake of thinking worldly. Because it looks worldly. But it's not. It's this. He wants us, Vyasadeva and Prabhupada in his purport want to protect us from that. So then when the exchange of love with the queens towards Krishna, they're liberated souls. There's no lust. There's no material conception. There's no selfishness. It's a very, very elevated state of serving Krishna. And they do it very elegantly. Hare Krishna. So, next verse. Although the queen's beautiful smiles and furtive glances means like kind of nervous and they don't want to exactly make eye contact with the Lord because of their shyness, or they're looking here and there. We're all spotless and exciting. And although they could conquer Cupid himself by making him give up his bow in frustration, and although even tolerant Shiva could fall victim to them, still, despite all their magical feats and attractions, they could not agitate the senses of the Lord. He's transcendental. In them there's no lust, and in him there's no lust. And that's inconceivable. That's not ordinary. This is one of Krishna's opulences, is his renunciation. And what kind of representation of opulence is it? The opulence of renunciation. Perfectly beautiful queens, perfectly chaste and faithful queens, with such love, such exclusive adoration and love for Krishna, with all the subtlest features of smiles and glances and gestures, and he's not captivated by it, yet he reciprocates with it because out of his compassion for their love for him. The epitome of this is found in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his accepting of the renounced order. Now, just go through this quickly. It's a very deep subject. We've been hearing that Krishna came to, because he can do these same pastimes in the spiritual world. He doesn't need to come here and do. He performs these pastimes here to attract the hearts and minds of the conditioned souls to him in the spiritual world. It's an expression of his compassion upon us to exhibit these pastimes in this realm. At the same time, his renunciation is full. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he accepted sannyas, the reason for his doing so was specifically, explicitly, for those who were offenders against him directly. The mundane personalities that, to whatever degree there was respect for religiosity, would offer their respect to a sannyasi, but they were criticizing him as a householder. Because of his being a householder, but because of his elevated states of pure consciousness, not understanding them, they were criticizing. The kirtan they were criticizing, and his internal moments of, as his students heard him calling names of the gopis. Why are you doing this? Where is this in the scripture? You should be studying Vedanta Sutra and teaching us Vedanta Sutra and according to the rules of grammar. Why are you doing this? So his goddess of fortune wife and perfectly affectionate mother, not different than Mother Yashoda. He left his mother, who had no other shelter but him. Her husband was gone. I mean, think, a religious person whose husband is gone, who had lost 8 daughters, just after birth. Oldest son already left, took renounced order of life. He's the only one left for his perfectly loving mother. And he left home at 24 years of age. Beautiful wife, loving mother, religious duty, happiness, everything. Well respected as in the Brahminical community largely. And he had everything. And the very persons who were offending him, for them, he gave all that up. So his ability to make, let's say, not ability, but facility for traveling freely and presenting that same message for which he had descended was made available. So this is the way Lord Chaitanya was teaching, one of the ways. But Lord Chaitanya's descending into this world, one of the reasons was to teach us how to, in practical ways, exhibit our surrender to Krishna. How can we live our lives in such a way that it will attract others to Krishna? Here's how you do it. And here's how you live your life in such a way love for Krishna can develop through surrender unto Him. So this renunciation of our own comforts or happiness or whatever, like the question you were asking this morning of person who takes a responsible position often has so much trouble. It's the way of this material world. Take on responsibility, you get trouble. So be irresponsible. That's not an option. You take the trouble. But the trouble is part of service. The deeper mood, you can look at the trouble and say, oh, I don't want any of this. But you look at what it's a manifestation of. It's a manifestation of one's sacrifice to the Supreme. And that's the shelter. That's the happiness. And then it's there's peacefulness within that relationship with Krishna. There's happiness, ultimate happiness within that relationship with Krishna. And who can abandon that happiness, a relationship with Krishna, for anything and call it peaceful? It's one of the paradoxes of spiritual life.